I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KNX News 97.1 FM,
this is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
It's 47 for 47. What am I talking about? Yeah, 47 days to go until Donald Trump becomes the 47th president of the United States. And today's Countdown 2024, if Trump's threats are to be taken seriously, no country is safe from having the Trump administration slap a tariff on its imports. But how will that impact prices on everyday goods? And are trade wars indeed good and easy to win, like the president-elect likes to say? We'll also look at a pivotal transgender medical care case argued in front of the U.S. Supreme Court today, and we'll discuss its implications for the bigger fight over transgender rights. But first, this.
Pete Hegseth might want to send out a Mayday call. The former Fox News weekend host and current nominee to be the U.S. Secretary of Defense has had to contend with a steady drip of negative news, whether it's multiple allegations of sexual assault or heavy drinking. There are reports now surfacing that President-elect Trump might be ready to move on from Hegseth and instead nominate Florida governor and one-time political rival Ron DeSantis to lead the Pentagon. There were even some rumors that Trump told DeSantis he would give him the Secretary of Defense position if DeSantis agrees to name his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, as Marco Rubio's replacement for Florida's U.S. Senate seat. But so far, Hegseth is pressing on as if he remains the pick.
Now, the president-elect made several more announcements of future administration personnel within the last 24 hours. He's tapped staunch ally and convicted felon Peter Navarro to be senior counselor for trade and manufacturing. He also picked up billionaire Jared Isaacman, a friend of both J.D. Vance and Elon Musk, to lead NASA. And he picked David Warrington, a longtime personal lawyer for Trump, to be White House counsel. Trump has now turned to several of his personal attorneys for administration positions.
The Trump transition team signed a memorandum of understanding with the Justice Department that could pave the way for formal background checks for administration appointees, but that does not necessarily mean that people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. or Tulsi Gabbard will undergo FBI background checks. Some of Trump's cabinet picks are opposed to submitting themselves to an FBI check until the Bureau is revamped by his chosen director. Meanwhile, the transition team is looking for private firms to conduct those background profiles.
Now, of course, this is not Donald Trump's first tariff rodeo. The president often threatened the use of harsh tariffs and did, in fact, place many of them on Chinese imports. That was during his first term in office. The results were not always great for the United States. For 8 years, Claire Reed was at the office of the United States Trade Representative, where she served as the assistant U.S. Trade Representative for China Affairs. And she is now with us on Countdown 2024. Claire, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So tariffs, which of course is a fancy way of really saying a tax on goods coming into this country, not paid by the countries that are sending the goods, but by the companies that are importing them, something that I think a lot of people don't get. Do tariffs really lead to reduced costs here?
Trump's advisors keep repeating, and Trump himself keeps repeating, the idea that it's just a terrific revenue maker and doesn't have any downsides. But economic studies from all sides confirm that most of those costs get flow through to the consumer. So if it costs, 25% more to bring avocados or tomatoes in from Mexico all of a sudden, or lumber from Canada or gas from Canada, you're going to see those price hikes coming to you in your grocery bill or at the gas station.
Now, of course, the people who are in support of these tariffs, Mr. Trump included, they'll often go back historically and they'll make the argument that, well, look, the United States until, what, the very early 1900s got most of its money through tariffs, right? Because there was no federal income tax. So they make the argument, if it was good then, how come it's not good now?
Well, the United States economy was in a very different place than it is now. And the amount of money that tariffs bring in is just tiny compared to the amount of revenue that the U.S. government needs. It's, you know, they talk about, you know, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you have money. Well, these days, it's got to be a trillion here and a trillion there. And the tariffs, you know, don't hit anywhere near that $1 trillion mark. So they are very inadequate to the task of funding our government.
You know, when you talk about the idea of potential tariffs on China under the second Trump administration, I read that many American companies have been diversifying their supply chains away from China. Is that enough to kind of offset the impact of any potential tariffs?
Well, certainly businesses all over the world, and particularly in the United States, have been looking seriously at what they should be doing, given the uncertainties that are created. But there are, it's hard to have a plan B, depending on how big or small a business you are. The businesses that are really hurt by these tariffs tend to be the smaller businesses that don't have the capital to start moving 20 years of, you know, know-how and, you know, equipment from China to Vietnam or to some other country in Southeast Asia. They're not going to move it back to the States. These small businesses ended up using China, you know, to make their parts and some of their products because there was no one in the States who would or could do it for any kind of reasonable sum. So it's definitely not a panacea.
The new president of Mexico has suggested that if Trump imposes new tariffs on Mexico, well, two can play the same game. Mexico can do the same for us, or to us. Can other countries hurt in a serious way the U.S. if they play the same tariff game that President-elect Trump wants to play?
Yes, and I think contrary to what happened the first go-round, in the first go-round, a number of countries responded, but responded in kind of muted ways. You know, it was kind of a symbolic response. But if Trump were to impose widespread tariffs across the world and impose tariffs on everything that comes from China, we would expect to see retaliation and tariffs on our exports to those markets without question. And other countries are quite savvy about where, you know, to stab the knife of tariff costs. So, you know, our agriculture industry, last time Trump did tariffs just on China, our agriculture industry was damaged severely to the tune of the U.S. taxpayer having to pay billions and billions of dollars to farmers, to our farmers, as subsidies to make up for the cost of the Trump policies and the retaliation that was coming in from China.
We are speaking with Claire Reed, former assistant U.S. trade representative for China. Let's talk a little bit about Mexico and Canada even more, because he just recently threatened, Trump did, a 25% tariff on all products coming into the U.S. from both of those countries. Do you see that really merely as a threat from him to kind of gain concessions from the leaders of the countries to address what he has posted about illegal immigration and the flow of drugs into the U.S.?
Well, it's interesting because he does believe that you need to assert your leverage as a businessman. It makes sense, you know, assert your leverage and then see what can be done to solve the problem that you have before you. One of the things that's a little confusing is that It seems like he varies in why it is that he wants to impose tariffs. So now he's saying it's, you know, fentanyl and illegal immigration, which makes sense in terms of major problems that we're having with Mexico. But Canada doesn't seem to be logical in that, you know, in that context. So it's as I say, it's a bit confusing. But to the extent it is a negotiating tactic, it certainly gets other countries' attention. And he, while imposing these tariffs, would potentially be inconsistent with our obligations under our agreements with Canada and Mexico. It's not going to stop Trump, and the other countries know that. So, you know, if he has something he wants to accomplish, they will come to the table at some point to listen. They may retaliate in the meantime, which will, you know, cause pain to the regular American consumer.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe we have with Canada a maple syrup problem or something like that. But that does bring me to the question of, can you tell what sort of consumer products, maple syrup aside, the American consumer could end up having to spend more money for because of potential tariffs?
Sure. Cars. Cars are a big cross-border manufacturing industry. So we have all our major U.S. manufacturers participate in joint ventures in both Canada and Mexico. So cars, car prices, some have said they could go up by $3,000. We've got your fresh fruits and vegetables. When we have winter in the United States, Mexico is still warm and offers us a lot of, you know, fruits and vegetables that we enjoy, from avocados to tomatoes to you name it. And then Canada is a supplier of some of our oil and gas, where it's more economical to import it based on geography. So there are some estimates that gas prices could rise up to 70 cents at the pump if these tariffs go in.
Claire Reed, thank you very much for being with us on Countdown 2024.
Well, just as transgender rights are set to be a major issue for the incoming Trump administration, the U.S. Supreme Court today heard arguments on a pivotal transgender case. We will get into all of that next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the show. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. We already got a taste of how the issue of transgender rights will likely be approached in the new Trump administration when Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace went on a week-long tirade about freshman transgender Congresswoman Sarah McBride using women's bathrooms on Capitol Hill. Today, we got what will likely be one of the biggest test cases of transgender rights argued in front of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, Margaret, the case comes by way of Tennessee. Why Tennessee? What's happening there? Charlotte Clymer is a transgender activist, writer, and U.S. Army vet. Charlotte, clue us in. What's going on in Tennessee, and why did it reach the Supreme Court?
Thank you so much, folks. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Well, Tennessee is one of 26 states that are dominated by Republican legislatures that have passed bans on gender-affirming care for trans youth. Trans healthcare is endorsed for youth by every major medical organization in the country, from the American Medical Association to the American Psychiatric Association to every pediatric medical authority. The problem, though, is that Republican lawmakers have essentially used this as a political flashpoint and are trying to drive donations and political clout by going after the trans community. Now, because most of the country doesn't know a lot about trans healthcare or the trans community in general, Republicans have had a lot of leeway to get away with blatant disinformation. What we're seeing right now are, I would say, socially conservative, conservative legal forces weaponize that lack of information in the public about trans healthcare to shove it through extremist judges who then will, you know, implement it in law. So the Supreme Court today heard about a challenge to Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for youth. And it looks more than likely that they'll uphold that ban. Now, whether or not they will kick it back to the states and let the states, individual states, decide whether or not they want to implement bans on trans health care is another question. But more than likely, the 6-3 conservative majority will uphold the ban.
So for those who are not familiar with it, can you speak to what gender-affirming care is and why it matters for transgender kids?
Sure. Well, first of all, about 40% of trans youth in the United States, 4 out of 10, live in states with these bans. When a child comes out as transgender, there is a rigorous process for that child or that youth to access gender-affirming care. One of the many points of disinformation is that trans youth are getting surgeries, which is just not true. However, in order for a trans youth to have enough time to decide whether or not they do want to get surgeries or other medical interventions down the line, they might be prescribed something called puberty blockers, which delay the onset of puberty to give doctors and parents and trans youth enough time to make those decisions. Puberty blockers have been prescribed to children who are not transgender for several decades now for a variety of medical conditions. But it wasn't until trans youth were prescribed puberty blockers that it suddenly became a flashpoint for the right to weaponize against the trans community. There's also hormone replacement. Now, after a trans youth gets to adolescence, they can be prescribed hormone replacement in consultation with doctors and with their parents, of course. But these are life-saving medical interventions. Every study that's been put out by this has shown that the rates of suicide, the rates of depression, decline dramatically for trans youth who do have access to gender-affirming care. So, I mean, this really is about life-saving healthcare for trans youth.
I wonder what you have to say to those who oppose gender-affirming care and even call it child abuse.
I wish they would actually get to know families with trans youth. You know, here's the thing. I put a lot of the folks who oppose trans healthcare into two buckets. I think the first bucket are people who are on the far right. It has nothing to do with healthcare or science or children. It really has to do with their strident opposition to just the existence of trans people. However, I think there's a second bucket of people who, in good faith, have concerns about trans healthcare because they don't know a lot about it and because there's so much propaganda and disinformation. And what I would say to those folks who really are genuinely concerned about this is that if you look at every single major medical organization who has put out statements or studies about trans healthcare for youth, every single one of them points out that this medical science is valid. It's backed up with studies. And most importantly, it really does save the lives and improve the lives of trans youth. And moreover, I would say that talking to parents of these trans youth is what's critical. There are a lot of conservative parents of trans youth who have come around after talking with doctors and want to make sure their kids have the best or live in the best lives possible. This is an enormously complicated topic for most of the American public, and so I give a lot of grace to people who don't know a lot about it. Who I don't give grace to are the folks who are shamelessly weaponizing this as a political cudgel at the expense of the health and safety of trans youth and their families.
We are speaking with Charlotte Clymer, who is a transgender activist. We will keep the focus on the fight over transgender rights as we finish off today's edition of Countdown 2024.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
And welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Transgender activist and author Charlotte Clymer remains with us to finish out today's show.
Charlotte, let's say the U.S. Supreme Court does uphold the ban in the state of Tennessee. Is there a workaround for those children, short of their parents, I suppose, taking them to a state that doesn't have a ban, but that could be extremely costly?
None whatsoever. No. And that's the tragedy here, is that trans youth and their families who are in states with those bans would have to travel out of state to get that life-saving health care. And 40% of trans youth in this country live in states where a ban has either been passed or has been passed and has been being challenged in court. So 4 out of 10 trans youth in this country would not have that ready access to life-saving gender-affirming care. And it's really, really horrible to think about given the increased rates of depression, suicide, bullying that LGBTQ youth in general have experienced over the past 6-7 years, but specifically trans youth.
Charlotte, we're running out of time, but I just quickly wanted to ask you, Donald Trump has used the phrase transgender insanity. How does that make you feel?
It breaks my heart because, first of all, folks, I guarantee you that no trans person in this country or anywhere else around the world woke up one day and thought, you know what, life is hard enough. Why don't I make it even harder by coming out as transgender? It's not a thing. And then second, I find it confusing because for quite a long time, Donald Trump supported trans rights. Donald Trump has gone on record saying that trans women can use any women's restrooms in his hotels. He has gladly supported trans folks in other areas of life. For the 4 years that Donald Trump was in the White House, trans women could use any women's restroom in D.C. I've lived in D.C. my entire life, including the 4 years that Donald Trump was in the White House. I use women's restrooms in the White House, in the Capitol buildings, in the Pentagon. I've washed my hands at the sink next to conservative Republican women, all of it without any issues. This is a fake issue that's meant to distract from the fact that the Republican Party doesn't really have any solutions to the struggles of working class families. And really tragic and unfortunate that trans people are being targeted.
Charlotte, we have to leave it there, unfortunately. That's transgender activist and author Charlotte Clymer. Thanks for being with us. Coming up on Thursday's Countdown 2024, no matter who might end up as Secretary of Defense, the worries are growing over encroaching politics into what is supposed to be the apolitical Pentagon. Politics and the U.S. military, that's tomorrow's show. If you missed the show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.